that one is disposed of. We have a second one on the calendar here, so.
Item 345, appeal of David Vanadia, Gwen Seymour, Ron and Morgan Cecil, Jim and Betty Havermeyer, and Talia Harrison against the noise variance granted to Walsh Construction for the Abigail Construction Site located at 1616 Northwest 13th Avenue.
Okay, Mr. Van Orden.
Thank you, members of the council. Paul Van Orden, the noise control officer with ONI. Very similar situation here, so I may be repeating myself in many ways. We have a review of a construction noise variance for Walsh Construction. The appeal regards the approval of a noise variance by the noise control officer for Walsh Construction for four dates under the approved variance for pouring concrete starting at 5 a.m. There were two dates that were approved by the board earlier, and then they moved the four dates under this particular appeal that we're actually looking at to the noise control officer for review. That was noise variance 3569176. In the review of the application, the noise control office was directed by the noise review board to first, as I mentioned earlier, vet the variances through the board. And in this case, again, like the Anderson variance, they did not see a necessity for the board to review this variance, and the chair technically moves the variance review to the noise control officer when that's the case. And at that January meeting, when the chair moved the variance to review to the noise control officer, they also offered the same input for consideration of the neighbors to explore not having the concrete pours happen on the weekend, with the same type of concerns for trying to adapt as best as possible to the weather conditions. And if the weather necessitated a pour on a Monday, which was a request we had heard at the hearing from the community, to try and limit as many days as possible if that was something that the contractor could do. And so we did administer a noise variance, again, in this case, sensitive to the neighbors' requests to not have concrete pours on the weekends, and went above and beyond that and tried to explore also limiting it on Mondays. The variance that we administered, same conditions that I was mentioning before, that the noise office is asking you to deny this appeal for basically the same concerns that I mentioned. The first concern being that the project in the community was delegated by the board to the noise control officer and was done in a respective fashion to the concerns from the community, that there were no complaints. And let me help clarify, because I do understand Mr. Vanadia's concern in the earlier appeal. When I say complaints, there were concerns raised in the review process by neighbors in terms of a handful of letters saying we would like to not see construction work early in the day. But in terms of what the actual noise impacts were in our feedback we received after the projects were transpiring, we did not have complaints that the work that actually transpired impacted the community. So yes, I will agree that there were a handful of concerns at the front end that citizens said in the review process, we'd like you not to administer a noise variance for early construction at all.
Is that because the work didn't occur as planned or because it was quieter than
anticipated? Well, I think very respectfully to the community, experiencing much of the same, not quite as dense as the Pearl, but very similar over in the Elliott, Boise, that area that I live, that if you tell someone you're going to do construction work at 5 in the morning, I would say that any citizen would say, who's the knucklehead who's approving that? And so I understand, unless you have the 19, 20 years I have doing this for the city, combined with the experience we have with the noise review board to try and figure out, is there an actual balance? By no means is there no impact on the community, but clearly in the case of crane erections, which we have taken sound readings on, they're not a giant noise activity. Concrete pours, they can be a notable impact on the community. Things like having trucks stage and have too many trucks in a row, having too many pumping operations happening at the same time. So I think what transpired was that the impact was not significant enough for the community to say that a handful of those dates necessitated all early morning work from not happening. So I would definitely intone that it is an impact on the community, and hopefully one that's metered out in a respectful fashion, and I think that's what transpired in this case. The third condition we said earlier was that the Police Bureau did help us out in looking to see if there were concerns in the community. We did not get a report back that they documented concerns from calls for dispatch or special reports from officers delineating that the community members had reported a noise impact that they were able to document. The notification was a little less on the Walsh project because they're not, the Walsh project is to the north of the Anderson projects that we've been talking about in recent council meetings, and it's a little more isolated from being directly next door to neighbors, so they did about a third as much notification in terms of just the numbers they did initially in submitting their application. But they did then again, after the application was approved, offer those buildings a copy of what the actual application was so that it could be posted for neighbors to see. And then lastly, the reasoning for denying this appeal is that the Noise Review Board is respectfully addressing this issue and is very serious about trying to find some kind of balance. You know, obviously we probably are doing something right when we're hearing from the development industry that they have concerns and we're hearing from neighbors that it may not be enough. Not sure that we're going to get to a point that we won't have that situation at the end when we bring something forward to council. But the board is definitely taking this issue seriously and trying to find ways to address it. And just as a slight clarification, when I said the issue about the garbage truck noise, what I was trying to intone and may not have effectively done is we were going to be working on garbage truck noise, which council actually directed us the last time we brought garbage truck noise forward to go back and look at it one more time before something was more formally approved by council, other than a handful of changes we made to garbage truck collection in the city. And so that was on our work plan for this year when we changed our direction and have been focusing on the construction issues at heart in the Pearl that we've been talking about at council. So those are the primary reasons, again, for our asking of council to explore a denial of this appeal. Yeah.
Questions? Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Pellant.
I'm David Venadia. The timeline for this particular variance was rather interesting. I also want to point out that the reason that we're here today is the result of over a year of constant struggle with the city and with construction companies trying to just find a common ground, a level of respect. We have been through quite a bit. So with regard to this particular situation, according to Paul, Walsh notified the noise officer, Paul, on Friday, January 9th, about their intent to apply for a noise variance. Citizens were not told. On Wednesday, January 14th, at approximately 12 noon, I was notified by my office, the office in my building, that Walsh delivered notice about their application. Management was going to hand out flyers the next day about their application, but instead, at my urging, since the next day would have been after the noise board meeting, the office placed flyers in the mailboxes of every resident at approximately 3 p.m. that afternoon. So the noise board meeting was that night at 6 p.m., that day at noon, Walsh sent a notice that they were applying for this variance, and my office, where I live, was going to hand that thing out the next day. They handed it out that day. Now, most people, if they get home from work, let's say 5:30, and they have children, they're going to see this notice in their mailbox and run out to the noise board meeting a half hour later. I don't think that really is a lot of notice. Gwen and I attended the meeting, and we opposed the granting of this variance. The board chair, with no quorum, said he didn't want Walsh to have to wait and said that they would retroactively ratify the variance the following month. The Walsh variance was drawn up, and we got the first draft from Paul via email on Tuesday, January 20th, at 6 p.m. Paul's email claimed, "Here is the Walsh permit that I sent over to them this evening. They had completed notification to the community on these two upcoming pours, and the chair mentioned that as a citizen representative, he was supportive of issuing a permit during the time frame before they could return to a full board meeting. Neighbors are also aware that there will be construction activity tomorrow. There were stipulations sent to the police and to Walsh explaining to them both how to behave if and when Gwen and I called the cops, because this all happened right after we had met with you. And so there was a lot of attention being paid into this situation. In fact, Teresa Marchetti called this period a 30-day trial period wherein which something was being tried. Walsh gave the Ramona office notice the night before the 5 a.m. concrete pour. And Walsh did a 5 a.m. concrete pour on January 21st. And I actually went and stood at the door of my building. And when people walked in and out, I said, do you know about the construction activity that's happening tomorrow? And nobody did. Nobody in the building knew what was happening. When the construction pour happened, we didn't call the police. What was the point? The whole thing was a ruse. After the initial pour, Paul distributed a clean version of the variance, and in that variance there were stipulations like no Sunday work, which was never something that was going to happen anyway, and according to ordinance, shouldn't be happening. They claimed notification was met, and Kathy clarified it. However, like I said, I stood by the door, and nobody in the building knew it was happening. Paul and Eric, who is the super there, had private communications via email and phone to organize the variance activity and prevent the police from being able to stop it. Walsh distributed flyers to the Ramona to notify the residents about their application. The interesting thing is that they distributed flyers enough to the office to give out to every single resident. And that was a stipulation in the variance. But they didn't receive the variance until after they had handed out those notifications. So how did they know that that was a stipulation that they should actually be doing? And they didn't do that same thing to alert the people of the construction pour. So we appealed the variance because notification was not ethical and non-existent. Citizens were cut out of the decision, and decisions were made without due process. The city was not prepared to process the variance and again opted to favor construction company over citizens. The noise board didn't have a quorum to vote and opted to ratify the chair's decision at the following meeting, which they did. The notification stipulations were not fully met. Walsh still used backup beepers, although they claim otherwise. The noise board didn't ask pertinent questions at the hearing and failed to take into account citizen feedback, which was ongoing citizen feedback. The noise office and the police worked in tandem to protect the privilege of the construction company while undermining the rights of citizens. The way in which the noise board and the city is acting damages trust and goes against the ethical principles of Title 18. With the speed and deception of this variance approval, we didn't even have time to receive a proper appeal process because the construction activity was already carried out. If the city can't handle the noise complaints, then it should give less variances instead of facilitating unlawful behavior. And the reason we're here before you today is because we have just followed every little avenue. You know, when I first talked to a foreman who told me, the city's never going to do anything. You know the city's never going to do anything. He instructed me to keep pursuing the matter until I talk to you, the mayor. And here I am. And I'm wondering really now who you might refer me to. So.
Okay, well, we have a hearing tonight. So
that's about pile drivers, though. It's just specific to pile drivers.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak in favor of the appeal or, if not, in opposition to the appeal? Afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Eric Holt with Walsh Construction. With regard to the timeline that Mr. Venadia described, I'd sent one of my assistants down to the noise control officer to apply for a variance for an early morning concrete pour, as we've done many times before. And at that time, we were told that all variance activity in the Pearl District was being handled by the Citizen Review Board. And then we were told that it was going to be meeting on the 14th. So the reality of the whole notification of the first concrete pours is that, you know, we found out a week and a half before the 14th, or a week before the 14th, that we had to go before the board. We weren't actually on the agenda but Paul insisted that we had to go before the board to have our variance heard. He is correct. At the time we went before the board, there was no quorum, so they kicked it back to the noise office. And at that time, they had described the notification that we needed to do. And my belief was is that we were in compliance with the notification requests that the noise officer had made. It sounds as if they don't believe that to be the case. As far as the amount of noise, the location of the site, you know, it's, again, it's progress. It's progress in the Pearl. The site is not bordered by another building. The Pearl Family Housing or the Ramona Apartments where Mr. Vanadia lives is kitty corner to the southeast, or excuse me, southwest. And the amount of noise when the concrete pumps are on site is fairly minimal. We made an effort to stage our concrete trucks an additional block to the west. We had Cal Portland, the concrete supplier, provide certified flaggers, disable the backup alarms, because that's a safety issue. So we did what we could to comply with the variance, and I'm surprised to hear so much concern or so much negativity regarding it, to be honest, because I feel like we went pretty far. At the second noise review board meeting, we also explained that, you know, we were going to actually use less days than we'd previously asked for, and the reason behind that was is we'd got together with our concrete superintendent and figured out a way to do one of the pours without an early start. So I recognize this is an impact to the community, but I believe we are giving our best effort to reduce our impact. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Johnson with Walsh Construction. I just wanted to add that, talking about going above and beyond, the Monday exemption, which is a little odd, and I wouldn't recommend necessarily be a rule going forward, was in response to particular citizen concern just in this area, just about these projects. So we have, in addition to staying away from weekends, we've stayed away from Mondays. So we've had to either accelerate through overtime or delay pours to make that work. So we've, as Eric says, I think we've done everything we can within reason. I'm actually not a fan of turning off the backup alarms. I understand the noise improvement, but the noise is there for a reason. That's the same reason that you have alarms on garage doors. You have train whistles and crossings, because people don't always look. So we're providing flaggers, but I would say flaggers are not as good as an audible alarm for most citizens. So we have to balance the safety aspect of this. But we're fine with it. I think it's worked fine. But it's just there's always this sort of give and take. Folks just don't look.
Why aren't the flaggers as good as the alarms?
Oh, the flaggers can only be in one place at a time. The alarm is exactly where the safety issue is. So if you have multiple trucks, the flaggers are protecting an intersection. But someone comes out of a doorway, comes out of their car, whatever. They don't control the entire street at an instant.
You don't have a flagger behind each truck that's backing up?
No, I believe that.
Well, no, there's a flagger that backs up each truck. But right. the issue is that, you know, an audible alarm covers more area
exactly.
than one person with a pair of eyes. And that's just the reality of it is.
They can't be 360 degrees around the truck.
So. Right, but they're there to stop people from being behind the truck. So if there's a person behind the truck saying, watch out, this truck is backing up,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that do the trick?
Well, it's worked so far.
It worked so far.
Right.
But
so I have a question about the... Are we on to questions?
Yes, please.
So even if... I'm going to ask staff about going to the board versus the noise officer, but didn't you know sooner than the day before that you were needing this noise variance? Whether it was done by the board or it just happened that the board was meeting that night, but...
No, we had gone to the noise officer, I don't know, a week or a week and a half before the pour.
Okay.
To apply for a noise variance over the counter, as we've done many times in many different jurisdictions. And at that time, we were told that we had to appear before the board on the 14th.
And why didn't you notify the neighborhood that week before that you were going to be going to the board?
I didn't know. I mean, I think, so let me back up. So we went in. They told us that we would have to go before the board. Actually, they denied my assistant the variance. He came back. I had to go down and meet with them the next day, I believe. And then I found out eventually that I had to notify everybody that we were going to be at the noise review board meeting. And I don't know that, to be honest, I don't know how many days passed between the time that I found out I had to notify people and I notified people. I think it was done in a timely manner. I mean, it's not like I was deliberately stalling. I'm just trying to make it clear. You know, it's not like I was. There seems to be this perception that construction companies are evil entities that are out to do no good. And I mean,
I have the perception that you know what you're doing and you plan to do it in advance so that it would be relatively easy to tell people. I mean, you did. According to what you just told me, you went a week ahead of time to get the variance.
Yes.
So what I'm wondering, and maybe directing staff and the noise board folks, that maybe we need to specify that there needs to be a certain amount of notice. If it has to go through the board, I think you'd probably agree that it's not reasonable to get a notice at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when the
No, I do agree. The other thing, though, would be is if I'd come in after the 14th and asked for a variance for a concrete pour on the 20th, I would have had no recourse.
Right.
Right? So I would have been delaying my construction project for 2 or 3 weeks till the next board meeting.
Would that have been the case, or would you?
I don't know. It didn't happen that way, unfortunately.
No, I have not been involved in construction. Yeah. So does the pour have to be done early in the morning? Could it be done in the middle of the afternoon?
It's an all-day activity. It's a thing that takes a great deal of time to accomplish, and there are many, many factors involved.
So unless you start early, you're not going to get done by the end of the day, and that's a problem with concrete because it
sets. Right. The start of that pour, those pours were about 5 a.m., and they were done by 5 to 6 in the p.m. Okay. So if you shift it, you're shifting it later, it doesn't improve things.
Especially in the winter when it's
not going to get
done. Okay, that helps sooner. Me understand because I wasn't understanding why you needed to start early any day, never mind.
The other reason, and the folks from Anderson mentioned it, is traffic. You know, to relieve traffic in the neighborhood, we don't want to pile up a bunch of trucks because most of the trucks come early while the people are trying to commute. It makes for a lot of delays in the trucks getting to the site, and it equally makes delays for people trying to get out of the area. So we try to work in lower traffic hours.
Can I ask, in the typical construction process, how much time are you likely to know in advance that you're going to do a pour? And conversely, what's an example of the least amount of time that you, under what circumstance would you need to schedule a concrete pour on a very short notice?
It's a very weather dependent process, and it's very weather dependent. And so this time of year, the weatherman has no idea what it's going to do 3 days from now. I mean, you know, you can look at 3 different weather websites and they'll get, it can't do it when it's raining.
On TV, you're still somewhat at the mercy of weather.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you contract for this service?
Yes, we have a concrete subcontractor who builds the deck. We have there's a great many people involved.
So at a time currently, for example, where there's a crane on every street corner, does that mean that it's harder for you to schedule concrete pours just because of the how much activity there is in the marketplace?
Absolutely, yeah. The availability of finishers is very hard to find them. I mean, you know, so what we end up doing is we schedule a week window and we tell the finishers we're going to pour in this week, and we hope and pray that there's a dry day, especially this time of year where it rains every 10 minutes.
We're not in your business, mm-hmm. What's an example of the worst-case scenario where you can't in a timely manner do a concrete pour and it has some negative impact on their construction schedule? What's an example of the worst case scenario, not able to do a pour within a reasonable period of time and its impact on everything else you've got scheduled?
Well, it depends on whether the concrete pour is part of the critical path of the schedule, which it usually is, which basically means that every day the concrete pour is delays the completion date of the project. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and so there's a cost.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's definitely a cost. And then, you know, we have an obligation to the developer to deliver on time. So when the concrete pour gets delayed, then we're looking to work a Saturday to try and make up time, which costs us money, which we don't really like to do.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is there's a little tension here in the system. There's the your difficulty in scheduling certain things and not necessarily having scientific precision when you can do it, and then the dominoes, mm-hmm. and then the public interest in wanting to get reasonable notice, and how you mesh those two, and they don't always overlap.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I mean, you're looking to put $100,000 worth of work in place in one day. It's a risky proposition, and the last thing you want to have happen is a downpour like we had yesterday, where it hails and lightning, and this time of year the weather is very unpredictable. So, you know, we were asked at the second noise review board meeting to give a 3-day window a week in advance, and we did that for the third and fourth pour. We delivered notices with a 3-day window to try and do what we can to notify folks. Anyway.
Just also want to make a comment about what you're talking about the alarms going off as you're backing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may not be typical, but I often rely more on my hearing than my sight. You know, I'll cross the street listening to see whether there's something rather than necessarily looking in.
Sure.
I think the benefit for many people of the alarm, in addition to the flagger, is that if you're not in the field of sight, if you're a kid coming off the sidewalk and running, or if you're a parent with kids or whatever situation, when you hear that noise of a truck backing up, you kind of know that there's a zone of a risk, even if you don't see a flagger.
Sure.
So, I mean, I know you're kind of rolling the dice a little bit, saying that you're trading off the noise versus the safety issue.
Right.
But I do think we all have become accustomed to when we hear that noise, that sound, it tells us that there's an area of danger. And a child can get off the sidewalk or a dog or a person to get into harm's way, before, in my opinion, before they see a flagger.
Sure.
Or the flagger sees them.
Or vice versa, yeah.
But is the zoning off of the sound, is that just until a certain time of the day, or is that, yeah?
Until after 7 a.m.
Yeah, until after 7.
Up until 7. Because if I'm out, Commissioner Fish, at 5 o'clock in the morning, then I'm looking around myself pretty carefully to make sure that there's not something. I mean,
we've had some joggers.
All kinds of hazards.
Yeah,
joggers.
They jog with music a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the iPad, iPhone thing really gets us.
Right.
On folks just wandering. Yeah. Fortunately, I'm not working around the college on this project, but it's always texting whenever you're around the college. They're never looking up.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak in opposition to the appeal? And then let me give you an opportunity if you want one for rebuttal, and then we'll get staff back up.
So, Mayor, what are we rebutting?
Their version of why they got the variance.
Okay. Gwen Seymour. So I want to refer to another project in the neighborhood just to give you a – no,
okay.
I need to give you an understanding of how things work with construction. Block 15 has never asked for a variance to do a concrete pour early. It's a very large building. I don't know how they do it. I'm not a construction expert.
What's block 15? Where is that located?
Between Northrop and Overton and 10th and 11th. Okay. It's called the Cosmopolitan, I think.
What's it called?
The Cosmopolitan.
Okay, because there's a lot going
next to the Tanner Springs Park.
Okay. Thank you.
So they've never needed a variance. And I don't know how they do that, but it's genius. And if we could only encourage all of these projects to be designed in such a way that they don't need variances either, that would really help livability quite a bit. And the only way that they're going to start making those design choices that way is if they're made to understand that they're not going to get the early morning pours. So when I brought this up at the Noise Review Board meeting, when this variance was being asked for, I was mocked. I was told, well, don't you understand? They just said they need it, and it's a different project. Yeah, I get that. I get that it's a different project, but we need to start making changes so that projects are doing things like whatever it is Block 15 did, so it doesn't need an early morning variance, because it is obviously possible.
Anything else?
David Venadia, at the noise board meeting after all of this took place, Paul said that he knew about the Walsh variance application on Friday, January 9th, and the meeting was held on Wednesday, January 14th. Just to put that into perspective, it was just a matter of days. Eric mentioned that construction companies sort of get this rap like they're all evil, and you know, we don't think they're evil, but what we do feel is that it's that our experience has been that they're deceptive. For instance, he had said that the concrete runs out, so they have to do these concrete pours early in the morning. But when I talk to a representative at Cal Portland, they say, no, we never run out of concrete. So I, you know, and I don't know what the truth is, but I just, there are many situations like that where one person says one thing, another person says another thing. For instance, Tiffany said tonight that today that they use a more expensive auger method, but recently the vice president of Hoyt Street told us that the only reason they used the auger was because it was cheaper. So we don't really know what the truth is. But when we look at the list of conflicting information and which way does it lean toward the company's benefit or towards the citizens' benefit, we can sort of suss out what's what. The relatively quiet pour that they did is in excess of 80 dBA at the property line. So when you have a large concrete truck staging that is stopped outside of your window, spewing out exhaust and running, it's at 80 dBA. And people in our building have children, so it's a difficult situation. And I forget the other gentleman's name from Walsh who said that this is a give and take. But it's not a give and take, and that's why we're here today, because it's always a take, take, take. And it's always the citizens who have to sort of bear the brunt of progress. And we're not against progress, but we would like to see a give and take. So if they're going to show up and do with backup beepers and 80 dBA trucks and do their thing that they have to do, which we understand is a difficult and expensive process, then that week, give us some time back. Because we as citizens, and this includes everybody here, when a construction site pops up next to your building, unless it's block 15, then you want a little give and take. So when you have your time taken, that affects your bottom line. And it's hard to put a number on that. Like you can say it's a $100,000 bottom line to do a concrete pour. But over the course of several years, how many thousands of dollars are being affected in a neighborhood where there are many families and many people working? So the idea that we've presented with your task force of livable weekends, I think solves or at least is worth the trial, because it provides a give and take. And that's what we're asking for. And that's a really equitable solution. And, you know, the Portland story is all about telling the world how equitable Portland is. And we would really like to see that be enacted here in Portland.
Clarification that what you just referred to about your proposal is what is, as Commissioner Fritz earlier said, is before in the legislative process? You have an idea, you've floated an idea, and that's going to be reviewed?
Is it going to be reviewed?
I'm asking
well,
you.
Let's hear from the noise review board and the staff about that.
Yeah, I haven't heard any.
Hearing, or is that for the evening's hearing?
No, that's not for this hearing.
Okay. Yeah, as far as we know, that's just an idea that got proposed and is just out in the ether, kind of like some of the complaints. So as a citizen, the last thing I'd like to say is that, again, the fact that we're sitting here before you is over a year's worth of diligent and difficult work, for which we have seen little results, but we have seen some little results. And so we know that that change is possible, and we're asking for your help. We're asking for you to do something to actually enact or live out the ethics that Title 18 and the Portland story say and profess.
All right, thank you very much. So maybe we could get you, Paul, and David to both comment on this this particular variance appeal and any issue it raises, and then we can also ask you about some larger issues here. So.
Yeah, I want to speak to
your name in the record, David.
David Sweet, Noise Review Board Chair. Yeah, the question that's been raised about notice. First of all, as Walsh Construction told you, they were not aware until they came in to get their over-the-counter variance, as they'd done many times before, that I had asked the noise office to refer all construction noise variances in the Pearl District to the board for adjudication. And I'm aware that that puts an extra burden on the construction companies, extra time. And in this case, they had every expectation that they could walk in and walk out with a variance.
Let me just stop you right there. Have we corrected that problem? Has the Office of Neighborhood Involvement now worked with development services to notify developers in the Pearl that they're going to need a variance?
We have not done that. We have definitely talked to the individuals who are operating actively right now in the Pearl, and as the cash and carry gets started, we'll reach out to them. One of the big challenges, which is not necessarily on the plate right now, is that there is definitely a disconnect insofar as I think what the citizens are bringing to the table is a request to have better understanding of when projects are happening. We're only going to know about those projects in the noise office if they're actually asking to vary from normal construction hours. So it would definitely be a great dialogue that I could sit down with Claire or one of the other folks in your office and figure out how to best.
Well, I'm just thinking it should be put in the plans examiner, for example. So if you could get the information with that current directive to Ross Carone in the Bureau of Development Services, we can make sure, you know, not everybody reads the plans examiner, but it's good to have. I appreciate that you've had individual contact with the developers you know about. In general, in development services, if we've changed a protocol, we try to get it out to everybody so that they're more aware. Sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
Thank you. Good suggestions. We'll follow up. So in this case, we did ask Walsh to come to our January 14th meeting, because it was an opportunity for people to hear what was going to happen and to comment, although we told them we would not be able to make a decision on their variance at the January meeting because there had not been sufficient time for notification, and the decision would be postponed to the February meeting. So Walsh ended up having to show up for two noise review board meetings to get their variance. Two of the pours that they anticipated doing were scheduled to happen before our February meeting. And in that case, I authorized the noise control officer to issue those variances on the basis of under the conditions that we had set. And
clarify that?
Yes.
It's not in code as to?
No, it's not in code.
Okay.
What is in code is that the chair of the noise review board decides which variances are come before the board and which are decided by the noise control office. And just this past winter, when we were hearing so many complaints about construction noise in the Pearl, I thought it best to bring those before a citizen board rather than have the single noise control officer catching all the flack on these and let the board make those calls and take the necessary abuse about them. So I don't know that any of our decisions would have been different, but it does give us an opportunity to hear from to do notification, to hear from citizens about these proposed variances, and to talk about how they can be done more quietly for the neighborhood. And that's what we've tried to do. So in this instance, we heard from Mr. Benadia that he suggested that variances be limited so that they didn't happen, the early starts didn't happen on Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. And so we, after conversation with the contractor, we did that with the exception that if there was steady rain and Monday mm-hmm. looked like a clear day, we understood that that may have to happen. So I think the process has given us an opportunity to improve our decisions and to be more supportive of the community.
And two other quick clarifications. The issue of not having backup beepers has been a long held one in the noise office even before I started at the city, and that's one that we have to very carefully coordinate with OSHA. So every year, every several years, I give OSHA a call and make sure they haven't changed their delineation, that we're in a comfortable position to require using flaggers instead of an audible or visible flashing alarm, and they have traditionally been fine with that. And if they tell us at some point they feel that's no longer a safe procedure, then we're obviously going to immediately, for the city's protection and citizens' protection, if it's not safe, stop using that protocol. So we do that only in the nighttime hours, usually starting 9:30 at night at the earliest and then going till the 7 a.m. hour. Occasionally on Sunday, if somebody's working, we might carry that till 9 or so in the morning to let someone not have backup beepers too early on a Sunday.
So what's, going back to notice, what's the standard amount of notice before a meeting that is there a standard in the code as to you must notify 7 days before the meeting or whatever?
It's not in the code, but I feel that notice has to be mailed at least 2 weeks before a meeting in order to allow people to actually attend.
So that might be something to add to your list of amendments to specify that. Obviously, you might need to have some kind of emergency, but I would imagine that most companies know that they may not know the particular day because of the weather, but they know they're going to be doing a pour sometime between, you know, 1st of January and 30th of October or something. I mean, is there a limit on the length of time? No, because the last one we had was for a whole year, right?
The technically within the board's policies and procedures, I can only review up to a year of work. Anything where someone's doing a big TriMet project, a bridge renovation, and a combined sewer overflow, those would go to the noise review board when they're multi-year projects.
But an experienced developer would be able to come in a month ahead of time saying, I'd like a variance for sometime between these months, and you would give a variance for, you know, 3 days or 5 days, whatever it is. And then what's the notification to the neighbors that, hey, it's going to happen tomorrow or next week? What are the requirements for that?
It's not unusual. Well, when it's a variance that's being heard by the board,
Once the variance has been granted, but it's not for a date certain. It's for, you know, pick 3 days out of 3 months.
And that's something that the board will often require as a condition of the variance, that we'd like the contractor to give notification to, and this is specific to the Pearl District, give notification to the surrounding properties with a window of when these pours are going to occur.
Are they ever required just to give a 24-hour notice that it's going to be tomorrow?
Depends on the project. Sometimes with ODOT, they're actually doing multiple notifications, warning months ahead of time. It really just depends on the extent of the project. We deal with such a broad spectrum of projects that if you have a static project like the Hawthorne renovation, then you're going to keep regular communication with the hotels who are close by. If it's a moving project like ODOT, you're re-notifying because you're hitting a neighborhood for a month or two and then moving and hitting the next neighborhood. So it's not, there's not an extremely delineated set notification because each project really brings a different set of parameters and impacts to the community. It really just depends on what the applicant's asking to do.
Paul, can I ask you a question? Because it just...
Can I just finish one follow-up question? So what they're specifically asking to do is the concrete pour. Mm-hmm. And they've been given permission with the variance that's duly notified. Yes, you can do three within this window. Are they then required to notice around in the Pearl it's going to be tomorrow or not?
Well, what we, not currently, not on every single project currently, but what we're trying to do in the Pearl is add the condition, because it is dense and there's a lot of projects happening. The issue we heard of re-notifying within a three-day window, so if they don't know it's going to be Monday, but they really want to try and get it in Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, then they're going to re-notify folks and say, these are the 3 days we're trying to get it to happen, which is not
perfect.
That's
currently in the standards?
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you, Commissioner Fish.
No, just as curious, and this is slightly outside the scope of the issue, but you mentioned something. And so, you know, I'm in charge of the Bureau of Environmental Services. We're being told by some neighborhoods that given the option of spending, say, 3 months on a project or doing work in the evenings where it can be compressed and get it done in a month, that residents and neighbors and businesses are saying, get it done. So we're running, you know, odd hours. But I'm guessing that creates another set of challenges around people who are concerned about the noise. And does that add additional burden on you with people that, even though we've got that sort of green light to go that way, that when they actually have to sort of deal with the consequences, maybe have some buyer's remorse?
Yes, so interestingly, for the Bureau of Environmental Services, Water Bureau, and PBOT, with the rapid changes in the city and how dense we're becoming, many practices they followed for years, not really consistently pulling noise variances, probably weren't a concern when the city wasn't as dense, but we're hearing a lot more concerns because they are trying to figure out how can we get this work done in a timely fashion. And in some cases, as you mentioned, it may be most logical to just work 24 hours a day for an entire weekend, for a week, and get it over with. And
or so, even if it's not as logical, if that's the overwhelming desire of the community to get it done in a quicker period of time, we'll try to accommodate. But you're saying that without, of course, referring to my bureaus, you're talking about PBOT and not pulling variances. You're saying that we're not always consistent in pulling a variance for those evening jobs?
I would respectfully say, unfortunately, we're trying hard right now in the noise office to figure out the best way to help our city agencies to get up to speed
right,
a little better.
So that's not within the scope of this, but since I've got two of those bureaus and Steve has a third, maybe Commissioner Novick, the three of us could give a meeting.
Yeah.
And because we're trying to bring as much customer service friendliness to this process, but if we're hearing that people want to do it in a compressed period of time, but that then is generating noise issues, I want to make sure we're getting both sides right.
And interestingly, in the deliberations we had on Cesar Chavez for a project, that was one of the things the board tried to examine very closely is, can we actually try to knock this work out quicker, and is that a benefit to the community? And we heard a dialogue from the neighbors and came up with a balance that I think incorporated some of that in the dialogue.
Thank you.
So can you illuminate just a little bit more for my sake or anyone else here, Ms. Simel, Mr. Venedia, where are we in your process of considering revised code? You've got this hearing tonight on pile driving. What's in the offing in terms of changes, and how might people that care about this other than in appeals hearings get involved?
So tonight's hearing, we're focused on pile driving as we have been since October when we took up the issue. So we are trying to come up with some appropriate code changes on pile driving. At the same time, there's a couple of other things that we'd like to do. So one of those is to acknowledge that the mixed-use zones project is going to change all EX zones to mixed-use zones and commercial mixed-use, and that in turn will bring about a change in the noise code. So in anticipation of that, we thought we'd reclassify the central employment zone, EX, as a commercial zone at this point and give some immediate relief to residences in those zones. And it will, in fact, reduce the permitted sound level at the property line, as you pointed out. So that's one additional thing that we are trying to do. It won't change the impact of construction noise between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. It will change what can happen on a construction site between 6 p.m. and 7 a.m. the following morning and on Sundays to a lower, a tighter, more protective standard.
Yeah.
I think that's going to cause problems for the EX zone properties in the Central East Side.
The EX zones in the Central East Side are mostly along Martin Luther King Boulevard, as I see that, and Grand Avenue. And I'm not certain that that's going to cause any problems given the mix of businesses there. I think it's probably appropriate. And what I'm told from the Planning Bureau is that is, in fact, what's going to happen ultimately through the comprehensive plan process.
I think the council has something to say about
that. I think it does as well.
A public hearing process.
Separate issue. I think anyone on the Central East Side has a bigger noise problem than construction.
Beyond that, Mr. Mayor, we are proposing to add a procedure to the Noise Review Board policies and procedures, which would allow us to designate a noise impact zone and to consider how variances for construction activity within those construction noise impact zones would be handled in the future.
Some kind of cumulative impact approach.
Yes, and we looked at whether a code change to that effect was really appropriate. The fact is we're not receiving an overwhelming number of reports of noise problems in South Waterfront, on Williams Avenue, on Division Street, on other places where there's been fairly intense local construction activity. It seems to be, I think that doing some kind of blanket code change to say if there are more than X number of construction sites within Y distance, that's a construction noise impact zone. I think that may be overkill. I think right now we're focused on the area where we're hearing that there really is a problem, that people do have a large number of concerns. And that's why we are and have been treating construction variances in the Pearl differently.
I received a lot of complaints about Division, so just so you know.
About the construction noise,
yes,
specifically?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't aware.
I think not everybody is aware of the noise board and that's the place to complain. So the natural place is the council. And so that is, I'm here to tell you that is a problem. And I actually would support your exploring the noise impact zone as a more fine-grained way to look at noise impacts rather than changing EX to commercial, which might have impacts, because you're right, the noise in the east side is not construction noise, but it's noise that's now allowed in the EX zone. So noise is noise according to the noise code, right?
Yeah.
So I think something that's a little more specific would probably be a better tool.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Other questions, instructions? Thank you both. Okay, do we have a motion on this appeal? On the second appeal?
I move to deny the appeal mostly because the variance is moot. It's done.
Yep.
Second.
Okay. Second. Any other discussion? Roll call on that vote.
Fish?
I really appreciate, Mayor, the conversation we just had, and we've had a number of these hearings. We didn't have any of these. We had no hearings like this for a period of time, and now we've had a bunch, and I think it's helped raise our awareness of the issues and deepen our understanding of where there might be some code changes to both add additional protections for citizens, but frankly make your job easier in administering this code. So thank you all for this. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think as these two appeals point out, we have an issue in the Pearl District that it looks like the Noise Control Board and the Noise Control Officer are conducting a process. It's not going to lead to something perhaps it's certainly not going to deal with the appeal right in front of us now, but I am optimistic that your understanding of the problems are there and we need to deal with them. And actually, as Commissioner Fritz just said, it may be beyond the Pearl District, but that certainly is the one that captures the most attention right now. Aye.
Novick?
I think that the Noise Control Board and Office have a very tough job because I think that people's solutions would vary considerably depending on their personal predilections. Like, I personally wouldn't mind having noise constantly from 10 a.m. to midnight on the weekends and from 7:30 a.m. to 11 on the weekdays because I mostly care about sleeping in the early and in the weekends, late mornings. But my views aren't going to be other people's views. So I think that you have, and also as Commissioner Fish is pointing out, some people would rather get it all done within a month and do whatever it takes, and others are going to say, well, stretch it out to avoid annoying me at certain times. So I think you've got a very difficult job, and I appreciate the hard work you do to try to balance those concerns and the concerns of, as people have said, progress versus annoyance. So thank you very much for your continued service. I wish you well. Aye.
Fritz.
So often usually in quasi-judicial procedures, we don't focus very much on notice. In this particular case, you brought some very good issues to our attention about the mechanisms of notification, both before and after the notice is given. So I appreciate that very much. And now that we're aware of it, the proper way to fix it is through the noise board and then bringing up a package of legislative changes to us, which you, of course, are welcome to come back and tell us about. These two appeals and the previous ones also highlight that probably the council is not the best appeal body for noise variances, simply because of the time frame. It takes probably 6 weeks to get on the council agenda, even if you're on it, even if you're lucky. And you know, here it is, we're April 1st, and this particular variance was January 21st to February 7th. So it's frustrating for citizens to get to council and find, well, it's moot because it's gone past, and you know, thank you for the information. We want to make sure that appeals are held or heard by the board in a timely manner. And I don't want to lose the option or the opportunity for citizens to come to council to bring issues to our attention outside of particular appeals. And so I'm hoping that the package that the Noise Board will forward to us will have an annual report to council at which citizens can come forward and say how things are going, what needs to be done in further legislative changes. Because it's just not appropriate to make legislative changes as part of a quasi-judicial hearing. We need to have everybody involved, and frankly, you having a certain amount of time to speak here, us having the last word up here, that's not the best way to come together to find a package that has board consensus. The process that I hope that will be happening at the Noise Board is the way to do that, and then we're the final adjudicators and tweak it at the end. So thank you for your attention to this. I really appreciate it, and thanks to the Noise Board and the Noise Officer. Aye.
Hales?
Yeah, I want to second all of Commissioner Fritz's comments. Not only is it not appropriate for us to make legislative changes in a quasi-judicial appeal hearing, it's not legal. You know, we can't do it. But I appreciate the fact that you've raised these issues. And it is true that people can come to this council regardless of what door they come through, whether it's an appeal hearing or speaking on the council communications items or showing up for something else and raise an issue and eventually get it addressed, maybe not as quickly as some people would like, particularly if it's an issue like noise in your neighborhood. So I have to plead for patience a little bit just because it is government. It takes a while. But my plea would be continue to talk with us and with particularly these citizen volunteers, Mr. Sweet and others. We actually, by happenstance, reappointed two more citizens to this board this morning. People that volunteer their time to spend a lot of time trying to figure this out. But I have high expectations for that discussion because it usually, between neighborhoods and business, often between neighborhoods and development, we figure out a solution, and I think we have the ability to do that. So we need to continue to try to look at the code and look at the process. I agree with the point you made about timely hearings. We're not providing them. So there's improvements to be made here in both what the code says and how we administer it. I hope you'll continue to talk with Paul and with David and members of the board, and let's continue to work on these issues. But again, the appeal on an individual case, particularly when it's now moot, is an awkward forum to try to fix the problem. But thank you for raising the problem that needs to be fixed. Aye. Okay, and we are adjourned until tomorrow when we become a budget committee in the afternoon at 2 p.m.